Someone's not sure to book in with you. They go onto your barbershop's website and your name's tagged on the following or something and they click on you. Then that's your portfolio. Mm. Yeah. That's how they know if they want to go to you or not. So it's so key.
Instagram's like LinkedIn.
Going back to what colleges could do better, or educators, is can we teach young people how to fucking talk to clients?
Yeah.
Like, can we have some basic, like, hey, can you, like, offer him a drink and hang up his coat, please, and not just stand near him as he sits down? We need to have more actual engagement lessons.
Useful, like, stuff, yeah.
No disrespect, I'm not being ageist, but if we had some younger educators in colleges, which I think is a good thing about us approaching stage work and having stage work, we understand what people, I say our age, our demographic.
Hi, welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laban, and we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap, and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hi there. Welcome to another episode of The Noble Barber. I'm Anthony Laban, and I'm here today with some new to the industry, or relatively new to the industry. So we have Liam Leahy, the mustache barber, as he's embroidered on everything. Good to see you, buddy. You've had a good run. There's been a big set of awards and wins and stuff for you this year. I saw you do a bit of stage work at Salon International as well. So, good call. We have Auburn. Again, you did Salon International, didn't you? You did a bit of cutting up there, which is great. And Harry Nunn, who, again, you've done, you've got Apprentice of the Year, you've got Newcomer, you've had quite an exciting first year. So we've got three people who've had really exciting first year, 2 years into the industry. We've spoken to a lot of people recently about young barbers. And so we thought it'd be quite fun to get someone in person and talk. So thanks so much for coming in. We put this together quite quickly. So you guys put your hands up, jumped in, and I really appreciate you coming round. I guess we should start really with what made you start out. There's a moment, I know from your point of view, this is second career time. From you guys' point of view, it was school and then barbering. Yeah. What was the moment where you went, fancy being a barber? What was the motivation?
Probably primary school.
Really? Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah, really that young. I was like, for some reason, my eyes were just set on being a barber. And then forgot about it for a bit. And then
was that from going to a barber's and getting your hair cut? Or?
Oh, no. My dad used to cut my hair with a zero all over. Yeah.
Excellent.
I don't know. I just wanted to be a barber. Yeah.
You were like, it's my 100%.
Function. Yeah.
Okay. And how about yourself?
Mine was so random. So I wanted to do beauty originally. And then I wanted to do forensic science.
All right, okay. Jump around a bit.
And then I was like, actually, I'm really interested in skin fades, and just kind of like fell into it. But I feel like that's how the best things happen for me anyways, like just spontaneous,
more kind just of organic,
throw myself into it as much as I can.
Yeah, so obviously mine was a little bit different. So I always wanted to do it in like secondary school. I was quite known for being well groomed. I always had different hairstyles and like that. Yeah, I was one of the ones to rock some dodgy trims as well. Like, used to dye my hair and stuff, different colours, and that would backfire, obviously. So you'd be rocking a ginger do for a long time. And the blonde was not very blonde and stuff like that. And I just went down a different route from when I was 18. I said to you, I got work experience at a firm in London, and they offered me a job, and I sort of looked at the money side of things. Like I said, wasn't from the most well-off family when I grew up, and that was an option where it was like, okay, I can get money. And I was never really happy in it. And a lot of people say, well, why did you stay there for 10 years? But it's easy to just change something when you're still at home. Like years went past, I ended up moving out and stuff. I got to like 25 and I thought, this is just never going to happen. But I got with my girlfriend, partner I'm with now at the moment, and obviously told her exactly what I wanted to do. And she was sort of kicking me up the ass to be like, you need to do something that you actually want to do as well. And then lockdown happened, so I managed to save the money. Obviously, I'm a different scenario to use. I had to do adult education. Adult education's expensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously.
Going into one of those ones, I couldn't necessarily go down an apprenticeship route. I couldn't be a 28-year-old apprentice. I wouldn't be able to pay my bills at home. I couldn't pay my rent.
Hard.
Yeah, I couldn't pay my bills. So I had to basically save enough money to do it and go unemployed and then just go for it. So,
yes. Yeah, so you went through the London School of Barbering.
Yeah.
12-week
the 12-week course. Yeah. So that was, again, being outside of the industry, you don't really know. There's so many courses available. Mm. Like, I know like 5-6 academies are offering a similar thing to the London School of Barbering. London School of Barbering just drew me because I was working in London at the time and it was close to where my office was. So a couple of times I walked past it and I thought, yeah, I fancy that. And like I said, I had a great time there. Like my 12 weeks, I got nothing bad to say about that. Although that was 2 years ago now. So I'm at a different level to what I was when I left the London School of Barbering. Mm. I made sure at this point when I was last there, I was more than happy with the level I was when I left the London School of Barbering. Yeah. Like, and I do think that is to do with the education they provided, but the attitude I had at the beginning. And not everyone in the course will come out at the same level. But I think you've got to be quite naive to go into any course or anything that you're learning and think, I can doss this.
You'll be hungry for it.
Yeah, you've got to be hungry for it. And you've got to be intently listening. Like, some people turn up late and things like that. I'll be there early. Do you know what I mean? And
it's your money.
You're saying you went through, you were kind of appeared at college.
And yeah.
And it
so
it didn't work for you at Wolverhampton College.
No, yeah. So I was meant to go from high school to apprenticeship, but then that fell through. So I thought, right, I need to like do something to get my foot in the industry. And it was hairdressing, which I didn't really want to do. But it's, you just got to do it if you want to get to where you are, aren't you? So did that for about 6 months, meant to be a one-year course, finished that early to then go into the apprenticeship. So I got offered it again, so yeah.
So you've experienced the college versus...
versus apprenticeship, yeah. It was very different. I mean, college, you, sometimes with your mates, I mean, I was doing 9 till 5 every day at college and then having like a 15-minute break here and there. And then it's like, I just didn't enjoy it, but I just persevered to... the apprenticeship and got money whilst enjoying it. Yeah. So yeah.
And yours was different again. So
yeah.
You
slightly.
How did you start into?
I emailed the bosses of the franchise I work for and they put me through the college course. But I'm not academic at all. I have like I have nothing to my name when it comes to like
right.
any
and
qualifications.
And just didn't grab you
it
in any way.
Just didn't go
college.
In. Like right. it
That would make it harder if you're not going in. But you were going into the shop though.
Sorry.
It's all right.
So I was in the shop 4 or 5 days a week.
Right. So you had the work ethic. You were going in.
Yeah,
you,
like I was
it was
gassed.
It was the college bit that.
Yeah, I was just like, why am I learning to wash hair when?
Yeah.
I know how to wash my hair. I'm a girl. Hello, you know, and. Because I didn't see the point of it. I obviously wasn't hungry for like the education side, but I knew I wanted to like give out good trims, and I was dedicated when it came to getting to the shop. I started working like 6 days a week after a while, and I wasn't even getting paid for that part, you know. College was just not working for me at all. I just wanted to be with my friends and kind of fuck about.
Mm. And was college? Well, for both of you, was college, was it the kind of curriculum or was it the teaching? Was it the approach? What was it that left you just
both.
Unimpressed?
All of it, to be fair.
Just
yeah.
boring.
Yeah.
I mean, the curriculum is not what I wanted to do. So, of course, I wasn't going to enjoy it. But then it was like the teachers were lovely, but it's still like if I'm not enjoying what I'm doing, I'm not focusing, I'm not paying attention. So I just don't want to be here. So
did you get free, like level 3 as well?
No, I only did the level 2.
But is there a level 3 at your college?
Yeah.
They were like, you're going to have to do another year if you want to learn skin fade. And I'm like, well, can I already do a fucking skin fade? I'm not, why would I spend another year when I'm like verging on being self-employed and cutting full time?
Do you think that was like the main issue of it though? Because it was stretched out. Like what you was learning, and that's what I'm saying. That this is why I liked the compressed side of course. I felt like I was being fed what I want to be fed,
and
having the clients there as well. And you felt progress so fast.
And the dog heads as well.
Yeah, like so. There was 6 days of that at London School of Barbering, and then you're on like real heads.
So college was all doll's heads. You didn't
like for a fraction of it.
Mm. Yeah, I mean they'll like washing hair. You'll bring your mate in to wash his hair and get judged on.
Washing it.
But it's like, oh, great.
So nice. I heard a lot of that when I was looking about when I'm going to change my career. And I was, I was actually a guy I worked next to called Connor, and he was taking my job when I left in the city. And he's when I said eventually serve everyone, because I kept it this big secret because I just didn't want anything to go wrong with it. And I was I'm leaving like 4 weeks' time. And he'd, when he was 19, started an apprenticeship, and he said, I would have loved to have been a barber. And he works in the city now. He said, I'd love to have been a barber. But he was 7 months in, and he'd done a one grade all over. Like, that's all he'd learned from his apprentice. So it might be the shop he was in, obviously not being provided the right thing, but things like that was just pushing me to be like, I need to get more education as quick as I can.
And so what would you kind of go biggest challenges during that training spell where you were trying to be able to cut hair and making that move to do barbering? Was it the college was the biggest, was the college the toughest bit of all of it? Or was it actually standing there cutting live hair? Where did the things get tough?
I've literally got nothing bad to say about my part. Other than like, there's a few teachers I was like, but I loved the whole process. If I could go back and do it all over again, like I fucking
You wouldn't change anything.
It was so fun for me. I hate to rub it
in. It is, it's really exciting. It's really exciting. Like, I thought like whether I'd stay in England forever, and then like the thought of going to somewhere completely like a different country and chasing that whole new client base again, it's exciting. Like, you're at a point where you're getting your client blocks almost full, and that's really good.
Yeah.
But like that beginning bit is so exciting. Like, when you're changing it, it's
No, but that's fantastic. And I think it's that energy that shows through for you guys to have all kind of, you know, and doing the expos and stuff. The amount of people I've spoken to are like, oh, I really wanted to get on stage. Or last year I was here watching other people cut on stage, and I'm here this year doing it myself. And
through the roof.
That kind of exciting side of barbering that maybe doesn't come through when you're actually doing the hard work of training.
Yeah.
You know, when you're training, there is that kind of like, I'm learning this, I'm learning that. But it does seem like there's always those goals at the end for a younger generation. I want to be on stage. I want to see a man. You know, I think you've all featured somewhere in magazine, industry, mags.
Yeah,
those kind of hits that you...
I don't feel like I've taken it all in, to be fair. But like, you know, when they're like, they say like, be present, live in the moment.
Yeah.
I remember like 3 days of my apprenticeship, but I was just on such a high, like, oh my God, I'm going to cut hair today. I'm not getting paid, but I'm excited.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like it's just, I remember hardly any of it.
Yeah, like when I think now, like about 2 years, 3 months since I finished my course, it's like that just went so quick. And then it's like at this point now where you're so used to being saying to people like you're new to the industry, it's making that transition to be like, okay, I'm not as new now. Like I won an award, I've cut hair at, like you guys were cut hair at Sun International, like you've won awards as well yourself. Yeah, it's like it's making you mentally check out from being like, oh, I'm a new barber, to almost telling yourself like, I'm established. I've got a client base. I am a barber now. Like, and it's a good feeling. Yeah. It's a good feeling.
Yeah.
And that's all happened for all of you over the course of the last year,
2024. Yeah. It's been a good year.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's amazing.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good year.
And so, just looking back before we move past the kind of training and gaining aspect of it, where would you, if you look back, is there anything that you think that could have been done differently, that could have made it easier for me, that could have made it more enjoyable, that would have made it, you know, for educators out there, is there anything that you can say that would give them something to think about?
Well, in terms of LSB, the first course, they're actually doing something now that I thought would have been amazing when I was there. They're getting a lot of like guest educators come in.
Yeah, no,
so,
I've seen that.
And that wasn't when I was there. So people going to the school must be even more happy now because they've had some big names in the industry go in there, and I would have loved that. So,
I wouldn't say anything, to be fair, to change or anything. It's just been that good and that quick going over that 1 year of qualifying and then going, now you're at Modern Barber, up for an award. Like, it's crazy how quick it's happened. So, I wouldn't change anything that our shop's done, at least.
Well, obviously, one of the big things we kind of talk about is the college side of things. And I've spoken to a lot of kind of, you know, more established barbers who feel very let down by what colleges are doing. Your experiences, what do you think they could do that would encourage and excite? It just seems like they're not grabbing. There's a lot of people starting courses that aren't finishing, like yourself, that kind of just find it tiresome. Mm. From your point of view, you didn't feel it was gaining anything on top of being in the store. Obviously, I know your experience is slightly different, but is there anything you can feel that they, when you were there, do you think,
I think
it should be like this?
We're getting a lot of, I've noticed there's a lot of educators that they're like, oh, it's my third year teaching. Like, it's dragging on for them.
Yeah.
So now it's going to be dragging on for us. Mm-hmm. But like, we need to have more like passionate, just passion in general, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like it would be really good if, no disrespect, I'm not being ageist, but if we had some younger educators in colleges, you know, which I think is a good thing about us approaching stage work and having stage work. We understand what people, I say our age, our demographics. Hear me out. I think we need more people in our, let's say, demographic that like have this like new passion. Because otherwise, yeah, I feel like sometimes older educators don't really like resonate with us. Yeah. And like, I've seen a lot of like a lot of educators that aren't even using social media. And it's like, how can we be expected to be like on top of social media if no one's fucking teaching us?
Mm.
You know, that's what we've got. We've got an apprentice in our shop now, and I'm going to make it my goal to get him on top of that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not just, I mean, as you're saying, you want, you know, LSB getting, you know, kind of named people, you know, we're seeing more and more kind of newer to the industry bods popping up, doing online training, doing their own academies. And there seems to be quite a hunger for these, for a new generation of educators to be going down the private route. There doesn't seem to be the same passion for them to get into colleges.
Is that just a funding issue though? Like genuinely, when you're talking about, that's what I'd say, when you, the college side of things, obviously not, I didn't go down that route. You guys have been there. When you was there, I imagine it had a feel when you first walked through the college's doors. I think of my local college, it's a little bit run down. It's not like modern, like some of these guys are providing private courses. They're obviously charging a lot of money, but they're backing it up with good facilities, good education. And obviously it's easy for us to moan about those colleges, but if there isn't funding, then everyone is going to be drawn towards getting more private courses to get better education, and there will therefore be less apprentices because people at a younger age, like I said, I've done it at 28, so I was drawn towards, I need to do something quick. If you're 18, still living at home, and obviously there is a generation where parents and stuff will pay for it, your dad or mum said to you, oh, don't worry, this is your last sort of resort, I'll pay for that course. You're going to go into that course. Yeah. You're going to do the 12 course. You're not going to spend 2 years stretching out the same education that you could get in 13 weeks, although it's going to be more education.
Well, equally, I think for the colleges themselves, they're not, from our point of view as shop owners, we've approached local colleges previously to see if we can get involved, and they're not that interested in us getting our people involved.
Most barbers are wanting to do their own private education because they can, like, it's what they, what I'm trying to say is they can control what they're doing.
Mm.
Whereas, like, with colleges and that, they're told what they have to do. Yeah. They have to show these old-ass PowerPoints and it's just crap at the college because it's not, like, been improved since how many years. Mm. So they're going private because then they can do their own thing.
It's not updating at all.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
So it just doesn't feel relevant.
No.
And a lot of those courses, they've got, like you say, that VCT certificates, and obviously there's the City and Guild certificates. So a lot of the private ones have to have those certification as well now, I think. I'm sure I see recently, like Barbara Josh O'P's Academy's got VCT verification and stuff.
It's their certification that they can have their assessors to rubber stamp the qualification, yeah. And okay, so before we leave training completely, I hear a lot about kind of hard skills versus soft skills. Obviously, with you guys, how you're interacting with each other and with the industry, your soft skills, your service is obviously really good.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just about, you know, your hard skills of actually cutting hair is one thing, but you're obviously, you know, you've been saying you're 6 days a week banged out. Your soft skills, your consultation, your client care.
Oh, is that what that is? Oh, I'm sorry, I had no idea.
No, that's all right.
I was just hoping someone would tell me.
That's all right. Okay. But yeah, no, that kind of interaction, the bit that's not cutting hair.
I think, right, going back to what colleges could do better or educators is, can we teach young people how to fucking talk to clients. Like, can we have some basic, like, hey, can you like offer him a drink and hang up his coat, please, and not just stand him, stand near him as he sits down? Like, we need to have more actual engagement lessons.
Functional, useful stuff.
Yeah, like we weren't taught taxes in school, and we weren't taught about just general chit chat and what to say and what not to say and respect.
There might be a generation of more introverted people coming through though, where there's obviously lockdown and stuff like that. People that's like 18, 19 being apprentices, they might have been like at school from home for the last 3 years. So then it might be a little bit of more of a struggle to bring them out of their shell than like you guys obviously was probably right at the end of your college school time.
I think there's like an influx of that. But I think if you see someone that's kind of shy, why can't we just be like, hey, like, try this approach in a nice way? Because like,
did you find that quite natural for you as your own personalities, or was that something you had to overcome, to just go up to a stranger and go, oh, hi, let me take your coat, can I give you a cup of coffee, take a seat here?
I think after like the first week of being on apprenticeship, it was just fine after that, because I was still getting to know like my colleagues and that, so I didn't know how to like approach them, didn't know what their humor was, didn't know anything really. But then really, once you find out who you're working with and you find out who their clients are, it's like people match with people based on personalities as well, not just you're a good barber, let me go to you. It's like how you talk to your clients, so you get used to different clients based off who they go to, really.
So have you seen on social media before, or you've seen people posting and they say there's like the hook, like the first 5 minutes is like the hook. Like I try and think about my consultation, it's like if it's a new client as well, that's like, this is my hook, like this 5 minutes, whether I'm if it's like a new client, obviously, and even if I'm backed up, like I'll make sure I'll still spend like 5-10 minutes at least talking to them to try and get out what they want from their haircut, because if it's a new client, chances are they're not happy with what they've been getting previously, and they might need that little confidence to get into like a new style or something like that. So I feel like that first 5 minutes for me is just as important as the last end product.
I mean, I'm still behind the chair of kind of, you know, a couple of 100 years in, and that consultation, there's definitely more, you know, the longer I've been doing it, the more of that consultation, of the conversation is more important than the actual cut. You know, I certainly know there's not a haircut I can't carry off. You know, I'm not going to get caught out on a skill base, but it's understanding that client's viewpoint.
Yeah,
so, you know, you're trained, you've done that. Now we're kind of moving into the actual kind of process of moving from, you know, as you said yourself a second ago, that I'm a trainee. Oh, no, hang on a minute. No, I'm not. I'm a barber. You know, that kind of movement. Can you recognise the difference between the moment you became, you made that thought process that I'm not training now, because you finish your training and you're still practicing on quite a lot of haircuts, even if those clients are paying for it, you're still learning as you go.
Always learning.
And did you feel there's a moment though in your head that you kind of went, I'm doing this now. I'm not a trainee. You know, I'm still gaining, I'm still learning, but
I'd be lying if it wasn't when I won that award, like definitely. When I won I think it was May this year. It was like 5 days before I turned 30 as well. I was buzzing. Like, I'm not lying. Like, I was well excited. So, yeah. And obviously, people were humble in victory as well. Like, I was absolutely buzzing. Like, I didn't cover it up. So,
and there was that recognition that you kind of went, you know what? Like, actually, I am doing it. I'm living it.
I'm doing all right. Yeah. So,
do you ever get like a hint of imposter syndrome? Like, it's for everyone. You definitely don't.
Well, no, but I speak to so many people that are established business owners who definitely feel that still have imposter syndrome, whether it's not necessarily about the actual work bit, but about having a business or owning a business. There's definitely a bit of imposter syndrome that I think runs through our industry. And I think a lot of it comes back to that initial part of learning. You're saying about not being taught social media or, you know, the kind of soft skills, the client interaction. Most of us aren't taught the business acumen. We're not taught, you know, even the maths we learn, you know, back in my day on stone chalk slabs. You're not taught any maths that makes any sense to you. So when you come into running your business, a lot of us still feel like an imposter.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been running my businesses for 30-odd years, so I'm possibly less imposterish than most. But, you know, but I certainly speak to a lot of people. It's not something that's just a year or two in your career. I think for a lot of people, it, you know, when they feel like they've got there and they've got their store, still find them thinking, well, really, someone's going to catch me out in this. Mm. Yeah, I think that's really in there.
I obviously, we all used to get our haircuts checked over, right? Like at the end.
Yeah.
I felt so, obviously they were like, my bosses were like, okay, so you're ready, essentially. You know, still keep learning. Don't like relapse, but you're ready. So my boss, Dylan, stopped checking my haircuts, but I'd always look over and he'd give me a nod. Right. And when the nods just stopped and it was just like, natural, I feel like that's when I was like, ah, this is sick.
I feel like I felt the opposite to that. Like after completing everything and then first day in being qualified, I was like, oh, this it now, like all of that. I don't know why, I just didn't feel like, get in, I'm done. I can do what I want now. I was just, oh.
Post-apprenticeship clarity.
Yeah. It's like, oh, well.
I'm in, this is it now.
And there's also this bit where you can be very similar to your trainer. You know, if you've had a one-to-one trainer, you kind of cut like they do and you approach your work like they do.
Yeah.
And then when you stop, you start finding
your own little things.
You know what I mean? You're not, you know, it doesn't take long, I think, for you to start kind of going, actually, I'm doing this slightly differently now. I'm acting slightly differently. Mm-hmm. And you become the you as a barber.
It's more sort of confidence, isn't it, as well. It's like, oh, you know what?
And do you feel like you've all got to that stage now?
Yeah.
I noticed that, like, I did things a lot different to Dylan, who trained me. My sister's work's different. I don't know. I think it's, like, a sign of confidence. Like, actually, I'm going to do it this way.
And you're expressing...
Yeah, it's more me. It's what I've learned privately rather than just from him.
Mm.
But, like, always go back to my roots, and I'm always grateful for like
the... Well, I think it's that core, and you know, I think, you know, possibly more from the... Well, hey, you tell me. But, you know, you've got that, you've got the skill, that raw skill that's been shown to you, but you nuance it into your own style. It's got, and that's what you're selling. You're not selling your educator, you're selling you as individuals and how you work and how you approach what clients you're going to get, if you like, from being you.
Mm-hmm.
I think with like the confidence thing, it suddenly like clicks when you're sort of done a haircut, you follow the steps that maybe someone's taught you to cut those, do those steps, and you can look at it at the end and sort of pick out something that you might want to just cut. Whereas before you didn't have the confidence, you'd be like, oh, I've missed, I need to go back and do the same steps all over again. Whereas you can just sort of after a while, you look at a haircut and know what needs to be done because you know how it's going to fall, you know, if you cut square or circle, you know what shape's going to make and stuff like that. But that comes after like, maybe not even just after you finish your course, that comes after like repeating and learning your own style, like you say.
I think it's sometimes good to be a little bit hesitant after we finish our training or we get the AIK. Because I've noticed a lot of overconfidence. I've experienced it myself where I've been like, oh, I've got this. And I've been like, actually, I need to slow the fuck down and actually just, you know, take a literal step back and just assess it. Doesn't happen anymore, don't worry, guys.
Even that, it's like the continued education thing, though. Like, so I did a couple this year. I'm going to do another couple courses next year. Like, just try and keep those consistent. Like, even if it's a look and learn or a two-day thing, it's not that much expense anyway if you're self-employed, and it's good to keep your education going. So it's like, although this was 2 years ago, or you've been doing it 2 years and you have as well, like, I imagine next year you'll probably do a look and learn because I know I am going to do another education course. It's not like we're complete, but...
I did one a couple of months ago, like a month ago. It's still so nice.
Mm.
First of all, meet people because I was doing it a group setting. That's so... Networking's like...
Yeah.
Get that right. Yeah. Events. But also, it's nice to just be like, oh, maybe I should try it this way. Mm. You know, like their way, you know. It's
like I met a guy at Hair and Motion Academy. This guy called Chris, he's my age, though, he's like 33. He said he'd see your podcast with me last time, and he was watching it, and he was like, he'd just finished his course, 12-week, and I think it was Total Barber Academy in London, not even the academy I went to as well, but he was like, it's so good to see that he's not like the only one doing it later on, because he felt like at 34, he thought, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it now. Now he's booked out Colin, successful barber, so, yeah.
No, that's fantastic. I mean, you were saying, so, are you following? There is so much kind of people doing haircuts on social media. There are people doing education on social media. Is that something you guys look at?
Always watching Dan Gregory. Yeah, excellent. I think it's just like I was terrible at consultations, but then he's amazing.
One of the masters with Dan's approach.
That's what I mean. So you just started watching him. You pick up on his little things, how to figure out what they want when they don't know themselves. So yeah, it's like Instagram, social media is great for learning as well. So yeah.
Yeah,
it's free.
Overall, well. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah,
it's free. So
yeah,
yeah.
So you're now kind of on the market, I guess, and not just for you. It's obviously it's for, you know, for other people who are kind of a year or two in. But once you're qualified, what was that first step like trying to get a job?
Look at me, I'm not involved.
But how, you know that, you've. I mean, obviously, from your point of view, you were both training in the stores you're working in now.
You had
the stigma of, oh, you've just done a 12-week course, you think you know it all.
Yeah, that was I did have that quite a lot.
Yeah, no, of course.
So I did actually get a couple of backwards and forwards on Instagram, but I don't do that anymore. I don't buy it. So I just thought, so sometimes I find like you see some people talk about on Instagram, it comes across like quite derogatory in terms of disregarding the education that people provide. And sometimes I'd just be a bit like, You wasn't there, so you're judging from an outside perspective, and you may be judging from one person that applied at your shop from that course, and he might have been the arsehole of the group. Mm. He might not have been paying attention. I didn't like it how he's always getting put into a box, how that these courses are not good, and we say, oh, if these courses weren't available for someone like me or someone like the guy I'm at Hair Emotion Academy, we'd still be in our old jobs very unhappy. So it was a bit of a stigma around it as well. I think it's got a bit better recently, but I did feel like when I first finished at London School of Barbering, and I wasn't aware of it. It's only when I got on Instagram, see a few coming off, I was a bit like, wow, like, I thought the education I got was great. I thought everyone was going to think these were a great barber, but I did have to like fight. And I felt like, you know what, I'm just going to prove it. I'm already posting my haircuts, posting them online. And that's why I got the little QR code on my business card, because I used to be like, have a look. You know, like, have a look at my haircuts you know, to just try and persuade people into it. Because obviously 12 weeks is not a long time to just be like...
What was your first position, though? Where did you get your first actual kind of job?
It was a place I still work now, Brentwood Hairdresser. I did 2 days a week. A guy called Rob John. He's a great guy. I used to work at Tony and Guy as well. And I worked with another guy called Jason. Again, like yourself, he's a student educated. Mm-hmm. So I do actually work in a salon, but I am the barber in the salon. But I got my hair cut there by a guy called Mike Burrow. He's a really talented hairdresser as well. I had really long hair down to like here. Right. And I was looking for a hairdresser to cut my hair because at the time I didn't want to just get shaved off. Yeah. I wanted like a style haircut. And I said to him about my intentions to do it. And I said, I was currently at the London School of Barbering. And he said, well, when you're done, come and give me a haircut. I come give him a haircut. And he liked it. And he said, yeah, you can start here. Aww. But that was literally... That was my test. I just gave him a haircut. But it was because I didn't know about the barbershop before. It was literally the pure fact I grew my hair so long and I was looking for a salon in the area that was a bit more upmarket per se.
Yeah.
And ended up getting offered a job. So it was quite lucky in that sense as well. I wasn't struggling. A lot of people on my course, as I'm applying at places, I feel like I didn't struggle because I put the steps in place for when I was finished to make sure that I wasn't perceived as a real newbie.
Misconception is that like you can do random, but you can do college to be an electrician. You can't go and be a fucking electrician. I'm not going to let you do the wires in my house. No, you need to get real like experience. A lot of people think, yeah, I'm going to learn on a plastic doll's head and then I'm going to be able to cut whoever, whenever I want. It's really, you know, you need actual experience in the shop, on the floor. And that's all I have to say.
Yeah. No, well, I think that's
a good thing about London School of Barbering is. So like I say, it's a 12-week course. If you're doing the nine-week level two, you're only like 7 days on a doll's head. And after that, they run it like a barbershop. So like the clients that go in there, I don't think Mike told you how he runs it because he didn't want to give away his secret about the other barber company. But it used to be free for people to go in there and get a haircut. But now I think people pay like £3 to the academy to get a haircut from the students.
Mm. Wow.
But because it's in the centre of London, you've got university students that can't afford a haircut in London. You've got influx of people working in lower jobs that are less paid that just want a good haircut. So you are at that academy. I can't say for other ones, but you're cutting real people's heads. So
yeah, no, I think, I mean, yeah, no, Michael's been very honest with this. He's been very good. But yeah, I think it's that, it's the numbers, isn't it? You kind of, yeah, you do your first 10 haircuts, you still haven't got a clue what you're doing. You do your first 100 haircuts, you got a bit of a clue, but you're still not left on your own devices. As you start getting 200, 300, 400 haircuts under your belt, that's when your confidence starts coming. It's that experience, you know. Yeah. That's where it comes from. I was really interested what you just said though earlier. You were saying that the networking. See, when I came into it, you didn't talk to other companies. It was, you know, if you bumped into another hairdresser or another barber, you were like, busy. Yeah, no, we're so busy. I've never, ever had a conversation with another salon owner or a barbershop owner that didn't have that was not packed out busy at all. Every sales, oh, how's it all going? Really busy.
Mm.
Well, and now I know if I'm quiet, you're fucking quiet. So,
yeah.
You know, don't lie to me. And we've got better now, but it seems you guys really embrace that. You know the amount of interaction I had at Barber Connect, that guys are just coming up, they're chatting to each other around our stand. Everyone was, it's a real natural networking.
It's quite sad that you guys didn't do that back in the day.
Well, I think we were very pretentious. we didn't have the magazine. You know, the magazine wasn't such a big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't competition. If you wanted to be the best, you had to be perceived as being in the best shop. So the easiest way to perceive you're in the best shop is to kick ass and tell everyone you're in the best shop.
Yeah.
And that was like, don't talk to the enemy. Whereas you guys don't sit like that. So I don't think we do now anymore. No. But you've come into the industry with that mindset.
Yeah, back in the day you wouldn't have this, would you?
No, thankfully not. Pioneering.
I think when you say like, oh, that was the enemy, I think the opinions change from enemy to this is my comrade. Like, we're in the same industry.
We're in the same
We all want to, there's so many people. There is a lot of barbers, but there's more people to cut hair. Like, there could be so many people coming through on their courses, but at the same time, people leaving the industry. There's so many people. I never got that with the older generations. They're like, oh, this is a new thing. We're all networking. I think everyone wanted to keep themselves to themselves, sort of thing, but not give away their secret.
I really get it, and I think I've watched their community grow amongst the kind of the group since we've started doing this, and we found it. You know, really, everyone's really nice to us and really warm and friendly, and it's been amazing.
I mean, I found the podcast account when you were on like 300 and something followers. I was like, hey.
Yeah, thank you. We appreciated it back then.
So important.
Love it. And so again, though, the one thing that this generation or your generation of barbers seem to have a much better idea of your own branding, your own self.
Yeah.
Whereas we kind of latched into the branding and the consciousness of the store we worked in.
Mm.
You know, is that a social media led thing, or is that just your mindset? Is no, I'm me. I've got my own.
I think it's social.
My own brand.
Yeah. So it's honestly, it's so weird though, because it's like I'm not really the best on Instagram. I post every now and then, but even then, it's like I was on a night out on Saturday, and some random guy come up to me and goes, "Are you Harry Nutton?" Like the barber. I'm like, I think so. It's just weird getting recognised from your social media by like 20-year-old men.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's one of them, but yeah, it's social media.
In a small town or like?
Sort of. It's not the biggest, but there's too many people in there.
I like walk past people on my high street that like and engage with all my reels, but like, my mic up. What the fuck's going on? I'm not some fucking celebrity, by the way, but I've had kids shout at me in the street, "Jim Spiegel." I'm going to Aldi, please leave me alone. I'm in my pajamas.
Is it generally positive? Do you have?
Hell yeah.
Out of LSB, then obviously there was that wave. But on the whole, you find it's quite a positive
100%.
Fan base.
Yeah.
base. Oh my God.
I want to call it a fan base.
I'm not going to be able to get out of this fucking door. My head's going to be like this.
This is the problem with cross-generation chat, isn't it? You got to wait for grandpa to catch up.
Marketing is so important, and branding, because I work for a franchise, but like I work for Mr. Barbers. I love working for them. Great team. But I'm me at the end of the day.
Mm.
Like, it's a copy. Trims by Orbs is me. It's my domain, my copyright. Mm. And when it benefits me and the franchise that I stay on top with my like branding. Like, even my personality on social media is different to like right now, I think. Because like, it's really good for engagement to be a certain way. I know it sounds a bit fake, but it pays to be a little bit more extroverted than you are when you're like with your family or your friends, you know?
Yeah, that's sense. Like,
again, this should be taught rather than like how to stop head lice. Can we talk about engagement and branding and marketing more? It's definitely.
But where did you get that from, though? Where did you find your approach to branding? You're saying you're not great at it, but do it.
Just see it online.
So it's self-taught, again. It's just like playing and finding.
It's a lot of
finding your own personality online.
Psychology.
As much as
a lot of it is psychology.
That's okay. So one of my things was like, at the beginning. I'm busy now and I'm booked out, but at the beginning, I was always conscious. I'd see a lot of people like, on a Monday, right, on their story, I've got this available, which might be loads, which is fine. You want to, but what that might do to some people is psychologically think, he's got loads of free time. I don't need to book an appointment with him because I could just turn up and he might be there. And then it's less of a like structured day for us. So I psychologically want them to think, these are the slots you've got to choose, instead of me listing on 2 weeks before, 2 weeks times appointments, they might not be as full. But list them all on my story. People will see it who are intending to book an appointment, but they might be like, I'll see what I'm doing that day.
Yeah.
Whereas it's like, book your appointment and then you know that's what you're doing that day.
Yeah.
Do you know?
This is why I say, it's never just cutting hair.
No.
Like, we don't, okay, admin. All I do is make hair shorter, but also it's not. Like, even when it comes to social media or like how I dress for work or how I say, it's kind of messed up if you think about it, like how I say things. But all of this, learning psychology and body language and stuff really helps with, first of all, client experience and, branding. I'm not going to keep repeating myself. It's so key.
Yeah.
Do you feel that
100%.
Way?
100%. Like, it's how people... Say someone's not sure to book in with you. They go onto your barbershop's website and your name's tagged on the following or something and they click on you. Then that's your portfolio. That's how they know if they want to go to you or not. So it's so key.
Instagram's like LinkedIn for barbers and stylists and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Sorry, I still need a finance chat there. But,
I mean, obviously, when we started, I started in my barbering career, it was the kind of heyday of the walk-in. We didn't have appointments, walk-ins. We just stood behind the chair and worked our way through the queue of people waiting. I would have thought most now have abandoned the walk-in, and it's
that.
Just not.
No.
And your generation of new barbers presumably have never experienced the walk-in as a trade. You might get the odd somebody pops their head in and you're free, so you'll do them.
Yeah.
But you've only known online bookings and booking appointments, presumably.
Yeah.
And that's got to be part of your marketing plan. You know, you can see you've got 8-10 appointments to sell.
Yeah.
So your way of branding and marketing you is direct to the customer, not through that shop front, as I used to.
I definitely still think there's a market for a walk-in barber shop, but like that's just not the barber stylist I wanted to be. Like there's such a wide array of people of what sort of service they want. Some people do not care. Some people just want their hair cut and they want to leave. Just but that necessarily won't marry up with me as their stylist. I'm fine. We want to go to someone else sort of thing. That's what I'm trying to say is like, there's definitely a market still for that. But the type of barber or stylist I chose to be was not that direction. It wanted to be more appointment basis. I want to have more structure. I want to, like you say, have 8-10 clients. These are my slots for the day.
Sounds bad, but I wouldn't, as a female going to a hairdresser, I don't know if I'd feel confident, like if there's like, she's got three people behind her, like, what's stopping her or him from like rushing my hair or like rushing to go have a fucking fag break or a lunch break? Yeah. You know, I like the fact that, hey, you've got 40 minutes with me. They're here 30 minutes early, but they can wait. Okay, this is our time. This is our little bubble right now. Yeah. And I think that's better with allocated time slots. I think it's much more relaxing.
But as you're saying that, taking that into kind of pricing, with hairdressing salons, there's always been this kind of like the more established hairdresser or the owner tends to charge a higher price then the graduate stylist charges slightly or quite a lot less, and then there's varying bits in between. So if you were going through a hairdressing salon, maybe as a woman, you'd kind of go through and you'd kind of go, well, I don't want the cheapest, but I don't want the top guy. I'll go somewhere in the middle. Mm. And that was your way of choosing a stylist if you didn't know anyone. What's your pricing structures in your stores? Is there a difference in hierarchy, or is it gents car, a gents car?
Yeah, yeah, it's the exact same. So I'm the cheapest because I'm not only just, but qualified recently. But then next one up for me is only £5 more. And then you've got Sean, who's 35, the most expensive. But he's manager, he's got the awards.
Is yours the same?
Difference.
No.
Everyone charges the same?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think that's more
usual,
I guess. I think the staggered pricing, I haven't seen much out of Barbara's.
I think my boss should charge more, but like he's doing what he does.
But that's real. We've had this conversation with others about the fact that, the busiest guys, the more established guys should maybe charge more, and then that encourages people maybe to try some of the other guys. We seem quite resistant to come away from gents haircut, £35 or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
From your point of view, going forward, you see a tiered structure? Would you kind of go, actually, now I've been doing this for 15 years, I want to charge more than the guy that's been doing it 2 years. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think if it was like, obviously it's not my shop, but if it was mine, I'd be like, I'm not being funny, you guys can pick your own prices. You either, like, if you want to charge £40, then you can deal with probably not having that many clients. I'd say, you know what? Within reason, charge what you're worth. But I'm not going to have, like, a 17, 18-year-old coming in, or 29-year-old or whatever, saying, yeah, I'm going to charge £30. As long as they can, like, pay their bills and match inflation, then do your thing.
You're self-employed, aren't you? So presumably you can set whatever you have quite a lot of control over your working week.
I have no idea. I have no idea if I can change. I think I could probably change my prices.
But you're happy with what you're charging anyway?
Yeah. I don't, like, I'm matching, it's business at the end of the day, I'm matching what everyone else is, not everyone else is charging, like what I'm worth. Like, I give a very good experience rather than just a good haircut. So I think, you know, you're paying for like, you feel like they're paying for time with us as well.
Time, yeah.
Like, everyone can do a good haircut, but sometimes it's just we get on like a house on fire. And I think they're also paying for that. So why shouldn't I charge a little bit more for like all this energy that's being consumed from me?
Yeah, it makes sense.
And we had quite a lot of feedback in previous conversations about kind of moving away from the kind of 25, 30 quid. It does seem to be generally across the board, a good end barbered haircut is kind of 30 quid-ish.
Yeah.
You might be 25, you might be 35, but it seems to be in that ballpark.
Mm. How long are these haircuts? Like, if it's just a two back and sides, do you think that changes things?
Well, that's what I'm asking you.
Okay. Yeah. So I've just taken your question as being like,
that's all right. I was building a question in for you to answer, but I'm not going to answer it for you now.
We're in the new year, 19 quid, and my haircut times are 25 minutes. But they're 30 minutes for a basic haircut. Mm. But I'd rather be 5 minutes late than miss out on an extra 19 quid.
Right.
Sorry.
But we've had conversations about, haircuts should, barbers seem to be reticent to charge kind of 40, 50, we put 60 up and everyone went, we had a huge kind of outcry of the insanity of the £60 haircut.
Yeah. Not where I work now, but I've had a couple of barbershops approach us on there. And then when we got to, I got my number, we spoke on the phone, and the charges up there are London barbers and stylists. But yeah, they're £60 haircut. I was surprised, but there are obviously places that are doing that. Like, I'm not doing that. Don't worry. But no, my salon, they all charge different prices as well. Like I say, Jason is a student educated. For a men's haircut with him, it'd be £40. For a men's haircut with Rob, it'd be £40. Mine's 30, but I'm going to be putting that up because there's stylist and senior stylist prices out there. And obviously,
you're feeling more senior.
I'm feeling more senior now. Yeah, so.
Excellent. So,
well, what's your viewpoint then on the kind of, so we've talked about the kind of, there's some great barbers out there and there's some companies that you kind of, you know, some barbers out there that you aspire to and admire. What do you think it is that separates the kind of best barbers, that echelon of kind of, wow, great barbers, to the more kind of run-of-the-mill
gang? Passion.
Yeah, work ethic as well. Some of them, like, you see on Instagram and you think, oh, they've got to this level, and then they've got a story at like 11:44 or something, cutting someone's hair in a different country that they've got a show on the next day, and it's like, you are putting the work in, bro. A-Rod as well, yeah, like Josh and Monica and stuff like that. They were cutting hair like in Kazakhstan or something, and the next day, like the night before, the night before trimming someone's hair, and it's like, you're about to do a show in the morning, like, get yourself off to bed.
Yeah,
so it's like the dedication dedication and work ethic like draws me to them as well. It's not just the trims.
Same.
You guys feel the same? It's that kind 100%. Of passion that excites you more for your careers going forward as you aspire to that kind of energy and passion that these 100%. Guys have.
The fact that they're still give, like, I've had a haircut for free from some of them before, and it's like the fact that you'd be that big and that much of a business owner, own your own company and stuff, and still be dishing out a haircut for free because you want it to look really good on a model shoot. And it's
I think so that links back to the last subject with, are you guys, if you don't mind me asking, are you guys self-employed or employed?
I'm self-employed, yeah.
Employed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know what to say then. Well, I was going to say, so I've known some barbers in my town, I'm not trying to call anyone out obviously, but they're employed and they've been employed for a long time, and it's almost like they know they're getting paid, they're just kind of droning for haircuts. No offense, that's not
no.
I know you have a lot of passion and it shows in your work.
Yeah
but I don't know if you guys ever noticed that
I cut a couple of like hairdressers, like male hairdressers as well, and they're employed and they have that actually in their chair, like I can, like we're both in the same profession, but he seems a lot more like, oh, I'm just going into work today. It's Christmas. Well, Christmas period's busier for him. He's more down than he has been because he's just got to do more work because his column's bigger than
looking
it ever has
time,
been.
Looking at the time,
looking late, and it's the same thing. So I get what you're saying there as well. It's like,
but did you feel that you were educated enough about how to be self-employed? So you kind of qualified as barbers and then immediately became businesses?
Like thrown into the deep end. I was like, launched. I was literally like, it was like a week after I turned 18, I went self-employed, and I was like, I ain't got a fucking clue how to do taxes.
No, I just got
and now I'm making, like, I'm making this money, and I'm like,
so where are you getting the help? Where are you getting the knowledge and the help to deal with the WikiHow, tax, all the other bits that go with it?
Yeah,
YouTube.
I got an accountant YouTube. To do that just because I didn't want to do that. And
I did the first year myself so I could educate. Because I wanted to be like, yeah, I can do my taxes. And then I fucked it up the first go, so lol. But then after that, I was like, I need an accountant because I'm just turned 20 and I'm still like, oh, I'm making this money, but like, I don't actually know what I'm doing.
Yeah, really, right. I probably should be able to do my own one, like given like my career previously, but I just didn't want to risk it. Like, I just thought, no, I'll do an accountant and do it all properly, legitimately.
Yeah, no, don't do what I did. That was, I'm still...
No, I mean, we employ... I mean, we've stuck all the way through. We employ all of our team are employed. I think the energy that runs through our company and what we're up to keeps everyone going. And obviously, yeah, the busier guys end up, you know, on a bigger salary. I mean, that's how it goes.
And I think as long as
you're feeling like you're getting your worth, then it works, you know, and you know, you go on holiday, you get paid for it.
You have people ask for like pay rises. Like, how do you guys approach that if you guys want more money? Was it done? Yeah, replies
yeah,
to
so
all
we
of us.
Talk to the team. You know, generally, we hopefully get to the team before they ask us for a pay rise. We hopefully get to them because we can see they're
that
doing
was a
well
private question.
And
I'm sorry,
we'll review it. The other side of self employment is, if you're on holiday, you're not getting paid. You know, if you're, you know, if you're
sick, you don't get paid. If you're, you know, they're the other side of being self-employed. That employment does stack you up a pension, does do a lot of the kind of stuff that you guys maybe aren't thinking about at the moment that comes back in later.
You can do a voluntary contribution if you wanted to.
Yeah, no. I mean, you know, you can set your pensions up and all that kind of stuff.
I'd rather just invest, guys. I'd rather just build my businesses. And
It's interesting, you guys coming in, that step between qualifying and becoming a business was so instantaneous without any, again, you know, school didn't teach you any, you know, learning a tax return at school would be so much more useful than learning Pythagoras's theorem of how to measure a triangle.
I didn't learn that.
Let's get back onto this the history of our industry, because obviously it barks back a long time, and you're at this. You've come along really in the last 10 years has seen a real swing, a massive change of barbering, and companies that have emerged, like, you know, Josh LaMonica's, you know, not quite 10 years old. You've got, you know, most of the big names that you'll talk about now are generally under 10 years old. And there's been this swing of kind of modern barbering. How do you view the kind of history of barbering? You know, we've talked about the walk-ins, which is gone, but kind of wet shaves and that kind of stuff. What other services do you see that you're learning or wanting to learn and bringing with you, or new services that you want to or are introducing to your clients?
I think the demand for a wet shave is definitely less. Yeah, I mean, I'm commenting as if I was there 10 years ago. I'm not sure, but I mean, like, I have like one or two clients ask me to shave them. The rest of the time it's beard shaving and stuff like that. I'm qualified, I can do a wet shave, but I mean, like, the demand's that little, I don't actually even have a price up on my price list for it. So, I mean, I'll do it if, like, I get on that conversation and someone or clients goes, oh, just give us a wet shave. I'm like, all right, but then I have to book out more time. Yeah, it's quite time consuming as well. Do actually, you want to do it properly, it's quite time consuming.
I like it. I'm learning at the moment, and I find it so, like, therapeutic.
The noise.
don't even. No, it's really good.
Yeah. I mean, that was part of what we had to learn for apprenticeship. I don't really like them, to be honest. I think I would much rather do a skin fade than...
Really?
Yeah, than rub someone's face with some wax, not wax, like, with like cream and that. But we have one or two, like you said, come and have a wet shave. That's like once every 2 months.
Hide in the kitchen.
Yeah, I'm there.
Not
I'm
involved.
Do the same. The kids got to hide away. I'm like, no, I'm not in today.
It's kids. Sorry.
And how are you? And so, in amongst this kind of new birth of the last 10 years has come the kind of competitions, the magazines, the photography.
Yeah.
How does that balance in your heads from behind the chair to into the studio, onto stage?
Really happy.
Does that feel all part of what you do? Is that part of your career?
It's good for everyone. It's good for everyone, the fact that that's gone in, because it's not like... There's more avenues of us instead of just sitting in a chair, cutting people in the same shop 5 days a week or 6 days a week. You could do that 5-6 days a week and know that in a couple of months' time you're going to be cutting up Barber Connect or Summit International or someone's asked you to go to an event.
It helps you like feel like this isn't just a job though; it's a passion. So, because doing like 6 months behind the chair and then realize you got modern barber to do a cut on stage, you realize like I actually enjoy doing this instead of just.
Just brings a bit more excitement.
Beyond the chair all the time. So
when people say, like, do you enjoy your job? Do you find it therapeutic? I'm like, it's a well-paid hobby. That's how I look at it.
It's a great shout. Yeah, it's a good way to put it.
But going back to, like, 10 years ago or whatever, one thing I've always point out is I really enjoy being a young barber because of all the trends that have come back. Like, I never thought I'd be doing mullets, like, 500 times a week. Do you like doing mullets?
Yeah, I've got a lot of so many mullets. It's actually why I grew mine out, though. So I got one in, like, 2021. And now everyone, so I'm growing it out, and then hopefully we'll mix it up again. And I'll try and change my hairstyle to encourage clients to change their hairstyles.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Yeah. Marketing 101. It's not just the T-shirts.
Yeah. No, it is, because then everyone, like I said, is, like, the first person who started, like whoever it was in like 2020 or 2021 that started getting money, because I obviously see someone getting money and I thought it was great. They probably, when they first had it done, didn't have like the best of people was going like, what have you done, maybe? And like, and then it takes a while for people to get like used to that. So I think like having different hairstyles or mixing it up yourself or slicking it back one day,
yeah,
they might be encouraged to change. It makes my job more exciting. You know, as instead of doing the same haircuts all the time.
It's like straight out of lockdown, I think everyone had long ass hair. I wasn't even a barber, but I think that's, well, I looked it up ages ago. I was like, why the hell does everyone have mullets now? But yeah, lockdown was a big factor because obviously there was enough hair to try out.
So many different variations now as well, isn't it? It's like mullet, mohawky, fade, focus, stingy. Yeah.
Do you like burst fades?
I love a burst fade.
Because
it's
like a lot of scissor work and also a lot of clipper work. It's like sand and sea, do you know what I mean? Get a bit of both in that.
Yeah, it's interesting the amount of scissor work now in barbering by comparison. There's not, you know, the straightforward just skin fades do seem to be in more of a decline now. It's not, you know, you've not got guys that have got a whole column of skin fade.
Thank God.
There's definitely an awful lot more long hair floating through.
Yeah, I'd say at the shop I definitely have scissor cuts more than fades and stuff like that, yeah.
You like them?
Scissor cuts. Yeah, I love a scissor cut.
Right.
I've got
Sorry. I feel like it's like Marmite though. I feel like I know some barbers that hate doing them, but I think that's a lack of confidence.
I think where I work in the salon as well, there's a lot of scissor cuts going on in there. It's quite rare that you hear the clippers going out. It's more just the finishing little tape, details, a bit around the sides and stuff like that. So it's not like a lot of fades there.
Yeah. So we've done the past. Should we whistle on to the future? So how does it look for you guys individually as your careers? What do you see yourselves over the next 5 years individually? Have you got a bit of a plan as to where you want your career, your business, your brand to go?
Yeah.
Not really, no. Honestly, I'm just riding the wave, seeing where it takes me. Like, only found out 2 days ago, I'll be here. So
like I never know what's going
to happen. Seeing how it goes, to be honest. Yeah.
Got like a little plan. But like, I don't know, I could be in Spain next week. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I didn't know I was going to be here. So very random. I feel like as long as I
But you see yourself staying in barbering and that being your career?
Yeah, 100%.
I feel like barbering's like just an umbrella, isn't it? Like there's a lot of stuff that goes on underneath. I think I'll always personally stay within barbering as a whole, but I'm really into business, and I don't want to be behind a chair when I'm 30.
Right.
Sorry. Only because obviously it's going to be like 10 years in at that point. That's personally how I feel. I really want to expand. I feel like my expertise aren't just in hair without sounding really conceited. I feel like I want to utilize aspects of myself in elsewhere. But I've been like that since before Barbara, and I've always known I wanted to be entrepreneur and self-employed and blah blah blah.
Would that be like owning like a barbershop though? Do you mean like that sort of thing? Or completely like leave the...
I'll dabble in it. I don't want my name on anything. I'd just rather the cash flow.
As you've been quite directed over the last two years, how do you see the next bit going?
Time's definitely not on my side, obviously, in terms of that thing. I'm not ancient, obviously.
This is making me feel new, okay?
No, but you're 25 years in as a business owner. So if
you're
talking about
35
years. 35, yeah. So obviously, if you take consideration when you started, I'm behind in that sort of thing. So I don't panic myself in terms of, I haven't got much time. In terms of I think I'm in a great window now where I'm just like strike when the iron's hot sort of thing, where like I am in that learnt still at the beginning, first years, I'm so hungry for it. The awards come in now, the client base is busy. I'm basically just saving enough money to make that plunge and make my own
business. You're more mature as well. You're more mature, you've got more experience.
Yeah. And obviously where I worked in the city 10 years ago, I have a little bit of the business side of things as well. I was manager as well, so I don't feel like the type, like bringing people in, working below me, I don't think that side's quite daunting to people, to be like going from just being a barber and cutting your client's hair to then being, stepping away from that as much and being the business owner as well. Because obviously I'm sure you cut hair a lot still as well, but it probably wasn't as much before you owned all of these salons and stuff. There are days when you're doing this sort of thing and you might have less clients.
Yeah,
and
I
stuff.
Try and do as much haircutting as possible. I love the haircutting much more over the business. The business, you know, from my point of view, we try and let the business
do itself. Yeah, so yeah, my aim is I really do like my brand. Obviously, I've done it straight from the beginning, the mustache barber. So I'm a Taurus, if anyone's wondering. That's where the ball comes from. I'm a Taurus. So that's where the ball comes from. Yeah, and I wanted people to just remember me at the beginning. So then I had like a really harsh, blunt mullet cut in here as well. And I just wanted people to remember, you know, and say, oh, that guy that cut my hair, you know, mustache or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it worked. So,
yeah, no. And so that's you guys personally. Industry-wise, do you think there's more changes to come as your generation takes a stronger hold over it?
I've seen like when you guys talk about it before with like Johnny and Alan saying like there has to be some sort of like regulation or tests or something. Of course, so some people like, I don't necessarily think that would be the worst thing, because that way people like Aubrey, self-taught, like yourself, well, self-taught, then you would, if you just done that test, obviously you can cut hair really good, so really good standard.
Oh,
if you went and done that test, then that would just eliminate everyone or even that conversation of them going, oh, you're self-taught, even though you can bang out a great haircut, do you know what I mean? Like, what I'm trying to say is there's so many different avenues for people to learn how to do it, and none of them are actually wrong. Yeah. You can teach yourself if you want to, and you can be better than someone that has taught you. And I just think sometimes the way that people talk about some of those courses and stuff like that, it almost gives the impression that the way you learned was the wrong way. You shouldn't have done that. You should go down this route.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe some blanket test or whatever some people say would just eliminate that, because there would be self-taught people that pass it. Like, you cut great hair. You cut great hair. I cut great hair. We've all done it a different way.
Yeah, yeah.
The example right here is the fact that there is a market for the 12-week course. There is a market for the self-taught barber, and there is a market for... Yeah. The college one. I just felt like some people chat about it in a derogatory way, and a little, maybe like a barber license or something like America, would just eliminate all of that and make everyone a bit more humble with it as well, and be like the fact that people can pick up a sheet of music and learn how to read it with never having a music lesson. Like, some people just have more natural talent than others. I had to learn. I didn't actually have it. I had to really learn. Like, my first couple of trims were crap. Do you know what I mean? Like, I had to really want to learn it, and I feel like that's why I've got to where I am now. Some people will say, like, if they haven't gone through that 2-year apprenticeship or their shop, then you're not a great barber. You should have done it that way. You should have done it the way I did it 30 years ago.
I guess also, though, that, like you say, there were people that were probably even on the course with you. There are 10, 12 people on the course with you and other apprentices who started around the same time, either with you or not, that didn't have the passion for it. Quite frankly, were shit. You know what I mean? You know, the fact is, if you've made it and you're running a column, you obviously did have that either the passion or the drive or the natural skill.
Yeah.
But there were others, people who started at exactly the same time as you, who were shit, who stayed shit, who didn't really care, who didn't come out of it, who are still trying to get a job, but didn't pick up any of the amount of skill that you guys did.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, tell you what it is, it's all these influencer barbers. Hello, that's me, by the way. I'm calling out myself. We, I'm sure we can all agree, we make it look like a fantasy to be a barber. Like, look at all the shows I'm doing. I don't know what the fuck I'm saying. But we make it a whole life. Barbering is a lifestyle. It should be your lifestyle if you want to be, you know, good at it, in my opinion. But we portray this lifestyle online, and young teenagers, or however fucking old you are, look at it and think, sick, like, she's chatting shit and cutting hair all day, and she can go on her phone whenever she wants, she can do whatever the hell she wants while she works, but actually, like, the mental draining part of it, and how overstimulating it is to be in a shop full of people, we don't see that. They don't see that online. There's people that come in the shop that have just scrolled through TikTok all day and haven't actually really cared about cutting hair. They just like the fact that they can just be there chilling. Is not a chill job at all. We need to end that stigma, because otherwise we're going to have so many like lapsadaisical people coming in that don't actually know what it is to graft.
No. The only thing that doesn't concern me about them people is that what you're doing and what you're doing and what I'm doing is going to be better than that they're doing. Because if you're still slogging, doing like 10-hour days and stuff.
I don't want to work in a shop with people that don't graft. You know what I mean? I look at it that way. I don't want to be...
No, I love that. I think that's it. I think, you know, all the conversations I've had with, you know, with barbers of, you know, maybe somewhere between my years and your years, I've all said the same. It's the work ethic. You know, if you're if you're a grafter and you've got a good attitude, you know, you can learn the skills. You can be turned into a barber. But to be a successful barber, you've got to have the mindset that you want to graft. It's physically demanding. Yeah. I love doing it. I still do a full shift. I still stand behind the chair. I've been doing it not just 5 or 10 years. I've been cutting hair for like, I think I'm coming up to 40 years since my apprenticeship finished. Mm. And I still really enjoy it. I still love doing the industry.
Yeah.
And it is that passion. You guys have got it at your age.
I love the fact we're getting summed. We're the same age as these two. Yeah. That's crazy.
I thought you were like 22.
There we go.
I love that. That's
I'm
good
not even asking that question. I'm not even going there.
Yeah.
Before we finish, I just want a little run round as to a piece of advice you would give someone listening to this who's thinking about becoming a barber, wanting to go into it, is sitting looking at college, looking at courses, looking at apprenticeships, where to go, what to do, maybe a second career. Can I just go around and see if for a piece of advice that you would have helped you when you first started thinking about this, just to give a bit of insight to maybe some non-barbers out there that are wanting to move ahead. Who wants to start with a...
I'll just say start practicing now. Start practicing now, get your equipment. I'd definitely say that as well. I think that helped me. I got my equipment before I started my course, delivered a couple of months before. I was like, took them apart, put them back together. And I feel like that actually helps you when you're qualified as well, because they're fiddly. They're fiddly. Just to get used to it and a feel, and while you're there on TV, watching TV, just have your scissors in your hands. Sometimes like that, just playing with them. Just get used to the feel of it. So when you go there on your first day, it doesn't feel unnatural. Don't feel like you're holding anything for the first time.
Yeah.
Realise that you don't need a GCSE to do it. Like,
Bob, man, yes.
I've got barely any GCSEs and I feel on top of the world with my career. So
I've got none.
There we go. There we go. So you just don't need
any GCSEs. But how did you choose the store? Which is your shop? Where are you working? Where did you apprentice?
FG, man.
And what made you choose that?
It's the only place where I live that does apprenticeships for barbering.
Okay.
So I
and
think,
getting the apprenticeship was straightforward? You just wandered in, asked, and they started you? Or did you have to batter down the door a bit?
No, so I was persistent with it. I was calling every day, getting the details, waiting a couple months, call back. And that's what they've said, why I got the job. They didn't give me the job. I got the job. Yeah, that's what they tell me. So,
and what about yourself? Whereabouts are you? And where are you? And where did you train?
I'm at Mr. Barber's in Sudbury, Suffolk. And I did one day at college, but my boss Dylan taught me pretty much everything I know.
And how did you get the job at Mr. Barber's?
Oh, how? I emailed them. And
why choose that one? What made you make that decision?
No idea. But I've got no clue what was going on. My mum's a hairdresser, and I was like, I don't want to be a hairdresser. I didn't want to do that. And then I remember sitting in my room and my mind was just like, oh, barbering. And then I looked it up and it's like, I think it's the first one that comes up on Google. So I just emailed them. I didn't tell anyone I was doing it. I didn't even tell my mum straight after. I was just like, and hope for the best.
So choose your shop. And why... LSB, did you look at others?
No. So, I was on Google, I typed in London Barbering School.
Mm.
Obviously, it's top one, isn't it? It's called London School Barbering. There it is. Yeah, and I said that I was really happy with what I got out of it. So, I vouched for them.
Iconic as well.
I really enjoyed it. So.
I literally know like one other education place, so this is the only one I know. Can't lie.
Well, guys, thanks so much for talking to me. The one thing I've come away from this, which I'll be honest with you, I've come away from just about every single interview we've done in this podcast series, is the passion for the industry.
Yeah.
And it's been really nice talking to you guys only a couple of years into working, that you have that passion. And to hear the phrase work ethic, passion, desire, you know, they're all the same phrases that even a few old boys like me still see as being the route to any level of success. Is you've got to do the hours, you've got to have the care for it, and you've got to put your passion for it. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Noble Barber Podcast. Thank you very much.
Welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch and come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode and we'll see you next time.